This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Irwin up at center for Kyle Turris. Turris got stopped there by Bufflin. Back in for Scheifele. In for Kyle Connor with some room. Connor, and he ran out as diving to break it up was Ellis. Shot by Morrow. Rebound, score! Blake Wheeler. A bad line change by the Nashville Predators. Kyle Connor with his speed ran out of room. Joe Morrow with the blast. Blake Wheeler with the rebound. We're tied 4-4. Now how big is that save?
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. That clip was from the last time the Jets and the Predators played one another. It was the night the Jets clinched a playoff spot with a 5-4 shootout victory. Blake Wheeler tied the game early in the third period. The Jets ended up winning it in the shootout. We now know, of course, the Jets' second-round opponent. We all expected this to be the matchup, and it has come to fruition. The Jets and the Predators will do battle starting this coming Friday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we welcome you to NHL This Week. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter, at IllegalCurve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve is where you can find us on Facebook, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
What's happening, boys?
I was about to say, Ezzy, what's going on? You're excited? You're ready? Game one, we now know, will be Friday night. They still don't know the rest of the schedule for the series. We assume it's going to be Friday, Sunday. We don't know what time. We don't know when the games are here in Winnipeg. Presumably, they won't come out with the schedule until following tomorrow night's Game 7.
There were a lot of Jets fans that were anxious. We have one guy that follows us on Twitter, Brian, and he's been asking us for the last 3 days about the schedule, and we didn't know, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
Guys, Paul Maurice was asked about it today after practice, and he said, you know, they didn't really know when the series was going to start. All they knew was that it was going to start Thursday or Friday, and we found out about an hour ago that Game 1 was Friday at 7. We don't know when the rest of the games are going to be, Drew. We expect them to be every second day, but at least we know when Game 1 is going to be.
Yeah, finally. It's taken a long time, and as soon as we have the information, we will pass it along, of course. This is the playoff series, the playoff matchup, Sean, that everybody's been waiting for. It pits the two best teams in the NHL, these the two teams that had the best regular season, against one another in, unfortunately, of course, it's the division final, and it's not a conference final, or it's not a Stanley Cup final. But say la vie, you knew you were gonna, the Jets were going to have to likely beat the Predators at some point in time. It's going to be in this second round when these two teams will do battle in what everyone is expecting to be an epic heavyweight showdown between these two teams. How do you sort of see this series at a macro level? And we'll get down to the granular details as we break it all down over the next 30 and 45 minutes here, Shawnee.
Yeah, just on a macro level, I got to echo the sentiment of everyone else. Just really excited to see it. What should be an exciting, fun, any hockey fan would just probably salivate at the opportunity to see these two teams play seven games against one another potentially. And, I mean, two very potent offenses, two very mobile defenses, and two goaltenders who are not only up against the Vezina for one, against one another, but were teammates at the All-Star game together. One guy, you know, Connor Hellebuyck saying that Pekka Rinne is a guy he respects and admires and has looked up to throughout his career. And Pekka Rinne kind of apparently was giving Connor Hellebuyck some advice at the All-Star game. So maybe a little budding friendship there. And it's just real exciting. We'll obviously break it down with much more detail, but it's on a macro level. I mean, you can't ask for a more exciting series in the West.
Yeah, I think, Sean, we're all expecting this series to go six or seven games. I think I'm going to go with seven games. We're going to give our predictions a little bit later in the show, but I don't think anybody's picking the Jets or the Predators in five games in this series as opposed to the first-round matchups that these teams had against Minnesota and Colorado, right? And, you know, I've been doing a lot of research here over the last couple of days in preparation for the show, our first show since Saturday's show, and it's really tough to find a big advantage for either team. And, you know, you look at the Jets and the Predators during the regular season. Yes, the Predators won 3 of the 5 games.
Mm-hmm. 3-1-1 versus the Jets.
Right, but the first game after the NHL trade deadline, that was a one-goal game in which we thought that the Jets were going to close that one out. So really, I mean, the season series, to me, is you give a slight advantage to the Predators, but it's not a big advantage. Yeah. And when you look at the Jets offensively, they scored more goals than the Predators during the regular season, but the Predators averaged more goals here in the playoffs. And that includes the extra game they played against Colorado. You'd give the slight advantage, I think, defensively to the Predators. They allowed less goals during the regular season, but I wouldn't give a big advantage to either team when it comes to the goaltenders. I think it's pretty clear, guys, that the Predators' top four is better than the Jets' top four, especially with some injury concerns, right? And that's no Dmitry Kulikov. But when you're talking about Roman Josi and you're talking about Ryan Ellis and you're talking about Matthias Ekholm and PK Subban, I think that's the best top four. And even that third pair, Lexi Emelin and Matt Irwin, that's probably the best third pair in the league. But we saw the Jets overcome injuries to key players in Game 5 against Minnesota, right? No Toby Enstrom, no Josh Morrissey, no Nikolai Ehlers. So you might give the slight advantage to the Predators in this series, but it's not a big advantage at all.
Let me ask you guys this. The games that they played in the regular season were, for the most part, high-scoring affairs. The only game that was sort of a low-scoring game was that 3-1 Predators victory that they had over the Jets. You remember that was the game Paul Stastny didn't play. The Jets gave up 2 shorthanded goals on the same power play.
Drew, these teams combined for 41 goals in 5 games.
Sure.
That's 8.2 goals per game, and Nashville scored at least 3 goals in all 5 games, whereas the Jets scored at least 3 goals in 4 of those 5 games. So I wouldn't expect many low-scoring games in the series. We might see a couple, majority should feature a lot of goals.
That was what my question was going to be. Do you expect these games where the playoffs, at least the reputation of the NHL playoffs, is that it's more tight checking, it's more, you know, attention to detail. Do you expect them to be that both teams are going to try and sort of clamp down on the offensive chances that we saw between these two teams in the regular season? Or do you think it's going to be sort of a repeat of what we saw, which was high scoring, back and forth, scoring chances at both ends, really sort of open ice style of hockey? Or do you think that both these teams are going to try and maybe play their cards a little bit closer to the vest and keep things, the attention to detail on the defensive side, more important?
You have to assume that just naturally the attention to detail defensively is going to be more apparent, especially with regards to the Jets. If you're talking about a little bit of a banged up blue line, the forwards are going to have to do a much more efficient job of back checking and being more defensively responsible. But then again, two great high potent offenses that could strike for 5 or 6 a game. And if discipline becomes an issue, we know both these teams like to crash and bang. We could see a lot of power plays and penalty kills. And that could lead to quite an offensive series. But then again, you've got two Vezina-caliber goaltenders who could potentially take over a series. So there's so many factors and storylines that could potentially evolve in this series. It's very interesting.
And Hellebuck outplayed Rinne, if you want to compare them. I mean,
outplayed him in the playoffs, you're saying?
Right.
Yeah, in the first round.
Right, if you want to compare the two. And, you know, Rinne's best work was in Game 4 through 6, not Game 1 through 3, right? And Hellebuck was, obviously didn't have a very good game in Game 3, but 4 of those 5 games he was excellent, obviously, with the 2 shutouts in Games 4 and 5, right? So I think, you know, the goaltending's a wash. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, whoever you want to give a bit of an advantage to, it's not a very big advantage. If you want to say Hellebuck's playing better going into the series, okay, but Rinne is the favorite to win the Vezina Trophy. The fact is, both of these guys are top 3 goalies in the league. Sean makes a really good point about the goaltending. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if Toby Enstrom is ready to go for Game 1.
Sounds like he is.
And it sounds like he is. He's wearing a full contact jersey in practice now, Drew. So if Toby Enstrom is good to go, you'd think maybe Joe Morrow's going to come out of the lineup. But right now, it kind of looks like, you know, Paul Maurice might be leaning towards keeping Joe Morrow in the lineup. And then maybe that third pair is Joe Morrow and Tyler Myers. And then you keep Toby Enstrom and Buff together. And then obviously your top pair is going to be Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. But it's going to be really interesting to see, because we know that Enstrom can move the puck. And at times, you know, the Jets did have some trouble moving the puck in the Minnesota series. So it looks like Enstrom's ready to go. Unfortunately, a guy like Ben Chiarot might not be dressing for Game 1.
Yeah, there were a lot of uncertainties, I would say, with regard to the Winnipeg Jets defense and lineup today as they were cycling through drills in their practice at Bell MTS Vegas Iceplex. You mentioned Joe Morrow with Tyler Myers. There were times when Sherratt was with Myers and Morrow was with Poolman. So I think that's the big decision that Paul Maurice has, is sort of who fills that third pairing left defenseman spot. So let me ask you guys this. Would you go with Morrow or would you go with Sherratt to play alongside Tyler Myers?
Yeah, it's a tough question, guys, because, you know, Joe Morrow was acquired prior to the trade deadline, you know, and we expected him to be the seventh or eighth defenseman, but with the injuries to Dmitry Kulikov and Toby Enstrom, he's played all five playoff games thus far, so I'm leaning towards Joe Morrow staying in the lineup, just based on the way he played in round one. I thought Morrow played better than Sherratt. Sherratt was not very good in game three in St. Paul, so I'm leaning towards Morrow sticking in the lineup and Sherratt being the seventh defenseman for now. If Enstrom's back, there's no way Tucker Poolman's playing. I mean, and he's obviously a right side defenseman, but right now he's the seventh defenseman out of that group.
No, you would say that Poolman's even the eighth defenseman if you.
Well, if Enstrom's back, sure, he's number eight.
And it's safe to assume Enstrom's back. It's safe to assume the Jets pairings are going to be Morrissey and Trouba and Enstrom and Byfuglien, and then question mark on the left side with Tyler Myers
on the
right side.
That's going to be Sherratt or Morrow with Tyler Myers.
Right, and Poolman obviously is your fourth pairing right side defenseman, which isn't something that exists during a game.
I think it's an option as well, Drew, to put Toby Enstrom with Myers and then keep Morrow with Buff, because Morrow and Buff have been very good together.
If you listen
it's an option. Sure. I heard what Paul Maurice said today. There's a good chance it's going to be Enstrom and Byfuglien, but I'm just saying, I mean, I think these pairings might switch depending on how game one goes.
So would you go with Morrow over Sherratt because you think, I mean, Sherratt is more of a physical defenseman than Joe Morrow is, and Morrow is more of a puck moving defenseman than Sherratt is. So you're thinking the Jets would choose to go with Morrow because of that puck moving ability as opposed to Sherratt and you know, maybe not needing as physical a defenseman on the back end on the left side in this instance?
See, I would argue the opposite. I would feel that Sherratt, as a more physical guy, a guy that is a little bit mean, a guy who we've seen, aside from, like, as you pointed out, it was a game three where he struggled a bit, a guy who kind of, his style of play is very suitable for the postseason. You know, he gets away with a little bit more, something that may have been called in the regular season. He's allowed to do maybe in front of the net, protect the house a little bit more, especially with regards to, we don't know how Steve Mason is feeling right now. He's putting in some work with goaltending coach Wade Flaherty. So because of the fact that the question marks still remain with a backup netminder, you have to protect Connor Hellebuyck as much as possible against a very, very, very aggressive Nashville forward core that is going to crash the net. And I just feel Sherratt, as a third pairing D-man, can do a little bit better of a job of protecting the house.
And you could be right. I think it's 50-50 right now.
It's a really hard
between
decision.
Between Sherratt and Morrow. I'm kind of leaning towards Morrow. Shawnee's leading towards Sherratt right now. We'll find out in the next couple
of
days here.
And Morrow gets the puck on net, which is also a benefit to him. He can fire the puck, so can Sherratt, but Morrow's got that quick release and can get the puck to the net really fast.
It is a tough decision for Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Other tough decisions in the forward group, as we're not sure what's happening with Joel Armia's status. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets forward group, we'll talk about the Predators forward group, much more on the Jets Predators series. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Back toward the line, Josi deflected in front, they score. Ryan Hartman at the side of the net will get his first as a Nashville Predator. And with 1 minute to go in the third period, it's 6-5 Nashville.
That was from the Jets-Predators game, that epic clash right after the trade deadline. Predators staging a huge comeback against the Jets. Roman Josi with 5 assists.
He beasted.
In that game against the Jets, so you know that shutting him down will be a focus area, an area of focus for the Jets as this series gets underway on Friday night. Welcome back to NHL This Week, this segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Winnipeg Jets, a lot of question marks still up front as it pertains to Joel Armia, really more than anybody else. No sign of Matthew Perreault yet in terms of skating, so it's safe to assume he's not going to be a player, at least for game one of this Jets-Predators series. That doesn't seem likely. You know, Joel Armia was out there today in a non-contact jersey, which is certainly a good sign, at least a sign that he's on the right path to getting back into the Jets lineup. Nikolaj Ehlers back in the lineup as a full participant. So the Jets' top six is pretty much set. Connor Scheifele-Wheeler, Ehlers, Stastny, Laine. No questions about that. It's the bottom six where there's a lot of, I'm going to say, confusion, including featuring regular Winnipeg Jets centerman Brian Little playing on the right side with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev today at practice. And Matt Hendricks, Andrew Kopp, and Jack Roslovic are your fourth line, if you will. How does this all factor in? How does this all play out? And how does this change if Joel Armia is healthy in time for Friday night's game one?
Yeah, I would be shocked if Brian Little isn't centering that third line. The main reason why Brian Little was moved to wing is because Nikolaj Ehlers wasn't ready to go.
In game five against the Minnesota Wild.
Right. So, yes. I mean, you said it, Drew. I mean, Matty Perreault's not playing game one. He hasn't been skating since he left game one in the Minnesota series, right? Yeah. Joel Armia is questionable right now. I would say probably doubtful, considering that he's been skating in a non-contact jersey, but that can change.
I presume, and we haven't seen a Jets schedule for tomorrow as far as I know, but if they skate tomorrow and then they'll travel you to Nashville on Thursday, one would, you know, that's usually how it works. If they skate tomorrow and maybe he sheds that non-contact jersey, then he certainly becomes more of a viable option for the Winnipeg Jets for Friday night's game.
Right, and the way I look at it, and, you know, Shawnee might disagree, but I assume that they want to keep Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev as a pair together, and I think preferably Paul Maurice would like to have Andrew Kopp on that line. That's the TLC line that's been so successful, right? But if Joel Armia is not ready to go, then you might move Andrew Kopp up to that third line, and I would assume that third line would look like Roslovic, Little, and Kopp. That's the way I view it, and then as far as that fourth line goes, Tanev and Lowry stay together, and
Matt Hendricks
probably goes between them, and maybe you move Adam Lowry to the wing. It's tough to say. I mean, if Joel Armia is healthy, I would expect that third line to be Roslovic, Little, and Armia,
which is what it was for a lot of that series against Minnesota.
And then the TLC line sticks together. But, you know, for me, guys, you know, looking at this, as you mentioned, you know, in the first segment, Drew, from a macro level, I think where the Jets have the advantage, their top six is better than Nashville's top six. I mean, you look at Blake Wheeler and Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, they've got more firepower in the top six. But when you look at the four lines, the best line for Nashville in the Colorado series was the third line of Austin Watson, Colton Sissons, and Nick Bonino.
They were beasts in that series.
They were unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, you know, Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, that's a great top line. But as far as I'm concerned, Connor Scheifele and Wheeler is a better line. And then when you look at the second line, the line of Kyle Turris, Kevin Fiala, and Craig Smith was really good against the Jets this year. But if you're looking at it from a pure skill level, Ehlers, Laine, and Stastny is a better line. But the point is, the Nashville Predators don't depend on one single line to get their offense, and that was shown in round one.
Sure. I mean, the thing about the Predators in that first round, Kevin Fiala, who you mentioned, was actually demoted for game six down to the fourth line alongside Mike Fisher and Mikko Salomaki. And Ryan Hartman, who was their big trade deadline acquisition, you just heard him in the clip when we came back from break. Ryan Hartman was a healthy scratch for game six after being suspended for game five.
To show you how much depth Nashville has amongst their forwards, Sean, Calle Järnkrok is playing wing on the fourth line.
Well, he Calle just Järnkrok, came back from injury.
Right, and Järnkrok is a 16-goal, 35-point guy. That's on your fourth line.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a talented player. Scott Hartnell, who's, you know, certainly a veteran at this point in his career, came back and played only one game in the series against the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, the Predators really have, I'm going to say, 14 forwards that they can use throughout the series and use them in some regards as interchangeable. The Jets don't have that. The Jets, when they're fully healthy, you know who the Jets' best 12 forwards are. Maybe you go all the way to number 13 and include Roslovic as somebody who can come in off the bench. But, you know, we haven't even mentioned a guy like Elli Tolvanen.
I was literally just going to say, how many times did we hear the name Elli Tolvanen prior to the playoffs? Have we heard the name once since the beginning?
He hasn't been able to make the adjustment straight from the KHL to the NHL, which shouldn't be surprising, but he's been a healthy scratch for the entire first round of the of this series against the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, and I think that was the plan all along. We talked to Willie Donick. We'll ask Adam Vingen of the Tennessean. We got Adam coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes, but I think the plan all along was to have Elli Tolvanen as the 13th or 14th forward, but you know, Scott Hartnell has played one game in the playoffs here, one of the six games, and then you mentioned it, Drew, earlier, Ryan Hartman, you know, former first-round pick. The Nashville Predators gave up a first-round pick to get him.
Mm-hmm.
He's only played four of the six games, right? So
let me ask you this then. So
a lot of depth.
You have a Nashville Predators team with a ton of depth that they can score.
But the Jets have a lot of depth.
The Jets have a lot
as
of depth.
As far as I'm concerned, yeah. Drew, the forwards are a wash.
Fair enough. But how do you deploy the Jets' defense? So if you say, or the Jets' forward group, you know, the Jets' best shutdown forward line, I would suggest, is the TLC line, as you've been calling them, Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp. Who does Paul Maurice deploy Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp against? Do they get the Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson matchup? Do they get a, you know, are you concerned about how good Sissons, Bonino, and Watson played? I mean, Austin Watson is a former first round pick. You know,
playing like it too right now.
Big, physical, you know, a power, prototypical power forward who can move. How does Paul Maurice, when he gets his matchups, how does he deploy them?
I would think that Paul Maurice would like to have, you know, the TLC line of Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp out there against the Johansson line. But Nashville is going
to
have last change
to start
for the first couple of games. And
sure.
I would think that if you're Peter Laviolette, you want to have Johansson's line go up against Scheifele's line. And, if I'm Nashville, I'd probably want to see Colton Sissons' line, or if you want to call it Nick Bonino's line with Colton Sissons and Austin Watson, mm-hmm. they probably want to match up against the Stastny line.
For sure, 100%.
Right? And, obviously, you know, it doesn't always work out how you want it to work out, but that's kind of the way I view things. And then I think the third line is going to be key for the Jets. And we talked about it. We're not sure if Armia is going to be healthy for game one, but I think Roslovic, Little, and Armia, or Roslovic, Little, and Kopp, I mean, that line's going to be key because we know how good Nashville's third line was against Colorado in that series.
Sure, the best line that Nashville really had in that series. You know, a guy that we haven't really talked about as we're talking about this, Victor Arvidsson, had a great season against the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. 7 points in the five games between these two teams. So if you're a Jets fan, I mean, you have to be not concerned, but you have to be aware, certainly, that Nashville won in round one, and they weren't their best. I mean, their best forward line, which is the Forsberg. I mean, Forsberg had some highlight reel goals. But all in all, I mean, Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson weren't what you would describe as fantastic in that series against Colorado.
Was it game four where Forsberg scored that goal where he came in off the left wing and just absolutely undressed Jonathan Bernier?
Because that would have been, it would have been game four because they won that game in Colorado. Game five was the upset where everyone thought it would end in game five when Nashville stole that victory. Pardon me, when Colorado stole that victory.
Who was the defenseman? Duncan Siemens?
Was it Samuel Girard?
I thought it was Siemens. Girard
was, I believe, in game one that Forsberg
was,
turned him inside out.
That was the other undressing?
Yeah, there were two undressings Forsberg had. I mean, he's the most talented goal scorer, I would suggest, for the Predators.
Moves he's been able to put on recently are crazy.
Because Ryan Johansson is not a goal scorer. He's a fantastic setup guy, but he's not a primary goal scorer for the Predators.
Arvidsson can put the puck in the net. Turris can put the puck in the net. Yeah. Even Craig Smith has been successful against the mm-hmm. Jets. I mean, they have lots of depth, and we've talked about it all year. The Jets do as well. I mean, we know the high-end skill the Jets have, so you know, I don't think there's any shortage of firepower on either team, and I just don't think you can give an advantage to either team when it comes to the forward lines.
It's just really funny because the more we read about both teams and, you know, you read the breakdowns and you read everyone's analysis, and you could really put either the Jets or the Preds for any article you read. They
right.
really are just so similar to the styles of play and, you know, to the active defense, to the pinching along the wall to make it hard on the forwards on the breakout, to mm-hmm. the excellent goaltending. There's so many similarities between these two teams.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I said earlier. I think the big advantage that Nashville has is in their top four. I mean, Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba are a great shutdown pair, but when you talk about Matthias Ekholm and PK Subban, I think that's the best pair in the league. That's just my opinion. And Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, I mean, I just think they have the advantage there. I'm not saying necessarily that's why they're going to win the series, but I think Nashville's top four is better than the Jets' top four. Not by a lot, but it's better.
At the end of this series, does either goaltender, Hellebuck or Rene, does either goaltender have good numbers, or do you think that they're more or less just sort of holding on and praying throughout the however many games this series goes?
I think you have to, based on the five games that we've seen, like, I think five is a decent sample size where you have to just think that they're like, okay, let in three tonight and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see 8.2 goals per game like we saw in the regular season, but I also don't think we're necessarily going to see Hellebuck get two shutouts in the series. Mm-hmm. Just because I said that, probably he will get two shutouts
four
in the
straight
series.
Shutouts. The Jets win four straight 1-0 games.
Well, thank
right?
you.
Yeah. Let's come back with Adam Vingan of the Tennessean, much more on the Jets and the Predators. We're going to give series predictions during the show as well. So stay tuned. Much more to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Asore, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's a good friend of ours. He covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. His name is Adam Vingan. Adam, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Adam obviously brought you on, talk about the Jets Predators second round series. It's the series that everybody's been waiting for since really watching these two teams have some epic regular season battles. You know, given that, you know, the playoffs are supposedly more tight checking, more attention to defense, more attention to detail in general, do you think that this playoff series is going to resemble what we saw in the regular season? Or do you think that these two teams can maybe button it down a little bit more and keep things a little tighter?
Well, you think they would button it up more because that's what often happens during the postseason, as you mentioned, but 41 combined non-shootout goals in five games between the two teams in the regular season. I was actually quite intrigued by something that Paul Maurice said to reporters yesterday just about the series and as to why people are anticipating it so much. And to paraphrase, he said, because there's high-event games and there's something happening all the time, which is true, because both of these teams play very similar styles. They're ice-tilting powerhouses, you know, play fast and play with a physical edge. I mean, they each have elite caliber wingers. They have depth down the middle. They have strong defense. They have two Vezina Trophy finalists in net. They really mirror each other in a lot of ways. So I remember over the course of the regular season, as those offensive games were piling up, and people were asking Peter Laviolette about, you know, why are these teams scoring so many goals against each other? He would always say, you know, it's not what we're intending to do. It just sort of happens. And I think these two teams, which were top five defensive teams in the league this year, happen to bring out the offensive sides of each other.
Adam, I think it goes without saying that Colton Sissons, Austin Watson, and Nick Bonino were really the big offensive stars for Nashville in the first round against Colorado. But is it safe to say that the line of Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson, they're going to have to be better in the second round and score some more goals against the Jets?
Well, I would look at that line, but you're missing the line. I believe actually went MIA in the first round, and that was Kevin Fiala, Kyle Turris, and Craig Smith. Nick Bonino, Colton Sissons, and Austin Watson were the best line on both ends of the ice for the Predators against the Avalanche. They outscored the opposition 5-0 at even strength, the Predators did, when those three were on the ice together. And they were mostly on the ice against Nathan MacKinnon's line. So that, plus the fact that they started less than 20% of their shifts in the offensive zone, really speaks to how good that line was. But Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, and Ryan Johansson had their moments, and I think they'll need to be better. But the second line needs to be exponentially better. I mean, to start Game 6 in Colorado the other night, Kevin Fiala was actually, if you want to call it this, demoted to the fourth line with Mike Fisher and Mika Salamaki, and Kalle Järnkrok was elevated to the line with Kyle Turris and Craig Smith to give it a different look. But when I look at those three players, the one that stands out the most that needs to show up is Kyle Turris, because that line was incredible during the regular season. They outscored opponents 32-13 when on the ice together at even strength. That's actually a higher goal differential than Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, which I believe was plus 18. Kyle was nearly invisible, and that's a nice way of putting it. And you know, the point of his acquisition was to give this team a 1A and 1B line, which you definitely need against Winnipeg because they have a 1A and 1B line as well. So when you look at Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, and Ryan Johansson having more to give, Kyle Turris, Kevin Fiala, and Craig Smith definitely have more to give.
Adam, even dating back to, you know, his days in Montreal, P.K. Subban always seems to have something going with Mark Scheifele. There's always something with the two of them going on, especially this season. It seemed to ramp up even more. Based on what we saw in the first round with Nathan MacKinnon, we expect that to continue with Scheifele and Subban going into round two?
Yeah, that's certainly an intriguing storyline. For as much as P.K. Subban was going after Nathan MacKinnon and vice versa during the first round, PK was effusive in his praise of Nathan MacKinnon after the series. They had a long chat in the handshake line, and PK came out and said that he believes that Nathan MacKinnon is going to be a Hall of Fame player at the end of his career. So I'm not sure if he has the same praise for Mark Scheifele. He may at the end of this series, depending on who emerges victorious. But you know, PK Subban, he soaks it in. He certainly did not endear himself to the city of Denver. They do not like him very much now. Some of the loudest chants at Pepsi Center, other than "Let's go Abs," were "Subban sucks" or other related chants. So I imagine that the denizens of Winnipeg will certainly not welcome him with open arms. I know that because they do boo him whenever he touches the puck at MTS Center or Bell MTS Place, excuse me. But that's happened everywhere now. He soaks it in. He relishes it. I think he has more to give to. His series wasn't that great. I would say he was solid, but he wasn't particularly, he didn't stand out that much. I'm looking forward to those two because I remember in the last game in Winnipeg, PK mimed like he was going to drop the gloves with Mark Scheifele and then demurred. So I wonder what will happen this time.
No shortage of gamesmanship between the Jets and the Predators. We're joined by Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper discussing the second round series between the Jets and the Preds. It gets underway Friday night in Nashville. Adam, Ryan Hartman plays the first four games of the first round series against the Avs. He gets suspended for game five, then he's made a scratch for game six. Was Peter Laviolette unhappy with the penalty he took that led to the suspension, or was his performance not great in the first four games? What can fans expect from Ryan Hartman, who the Predators acquired from the Blackhawks at the trade deadline?
Well, they should expect the Ryan Hartman that, or they would hope to expect the Ryan Hartman who made an incredible debut against the Jets on February 27th, scoring the game-winning goal with a minute left and just being all around the ice. That honestly, I think that may have been Ryan Hartman's best game with the Predators, and it was his first game. He was all over the ice in game four, stirring up some trouble. I mean, he did get speared a couple times by Sven Andraghetto that went unnoticed, which sort of set off the temper tantrum and then maybe led to him hitting Carl Soderberg in the head. But, suspended in game five and scratched in game six. Scott Hartnell came in his place in game five. Mika Salimaki came back in place of both of them in game six. I mean, I imagine Ryan Hartman will be back in the lineup. I look back at that game in February in Winnipeg as the perfect example of what Ryan Hartman can do. I mean, he hits everything that moves. He's always crashing the net. I mean, he is reliable in that sense, and they're going to need that. I wonder, though, my personal take on this is just my own personal opinion. The reason why he didn't play game six is because they need to stay out of the penalty box, and you can't risk Ryan Hartman doing something that's going to put the Predators at a disadvantage. But I think he's probably learned his lesson by now, so I expect him to be back in the lineup for game one, and I expect him to have some sort of role.
Who would you expect to come out of the lineup to replace him?
Mika Salimaki.
Adam, Mike Fisher surprised everybody, I imagine, including yourself, and came out of retirement back in January. What kind of role do you think Fisher's going to play in this second-round series against the Jets? Obviously, Fisher's not a guy that they rely on for a lot of goals, but they rely on him more for his defensive play.
Yeah, he was outstanding in the faceoff circle. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were upwards of 60% in the faceoff circle in the first round against Colorado. I mean, he's coming back. He came back, and he has, since he returned to the lineup, done what he should be doing. And he's being, a pretty scarcely used fourth-line center at even strength, taking defensive zone draws, maybe getting a little bit of penalty kill time. Last year, they had to ask more of him because they didn't have the depth down the middle that they do now. Now, you hope that Kyle Turris has a better series against Winnipeg. You can only ask, you can just as long as you get the same Nick Bonino centering the line with Watson and Sissons in the third round, you're going to be great there. So you really don't need Mike Fisher to do all that much, and I think that's good for them and it's good for him. So expect him to take a lot of important defensive zone draws at even strength get some PK time, and otherwise, that's about it.
Adam, you know, the competition on the ice is, you know, to be up, just is going to be incredible. But it's really intriguing when you look at the venues, and you have the Seventh Man versus the Winnipeg Whiteout, and two fan bases that are raucous, that are loud, that are excitable, and kind of want to, you know, outdo one another, just like the teams on the ice.
Yeah, and I'm actually curious because I saw the scenes in Winnipeg. I know I love watching games in Winnipeg. I think it's arguably my favorite road atmosphere in the NHL. You guys will have to. I'm going to ask you a question. Where did they fit all the people who are watching outside? Because I, you know, downtown Winnipeg, from what I know, isn't that large in terms of how wide it is. But there are people stuffed, you know, many deep into the streets. Where did they fit them all?
It's about a three block. It's one street that's gone. They've extended for three blocks. So it's a street that runs north south, that runs from Portage Avenue all the way to St. Mary Avenue, and then it's actually spilled over its banks, if you will. It's sort of, you know, they were forced to shut down extra streets for game five just because the amount of people there grew too big for its size. So it's really a two or three block area that they've jammed everybody in. We've like to call it the runway party here, but we're having some difficulty getting it to catch on despite us saying it over and over again.
Well, I like it. It was really cool. And of course, the whiteout is awesome to see from afar, and I'm looking forward to experiencing it myself. Yeah, but you've got two really great fan bases. You've got two raucous buildings. I guess the only way that I think that the Jets can get a one-up on the Predators anthem singers is if they get the crash test dummies to sing the anthem before game three. You know, that would be great. But yeah, I look forward to that aspect of it too, because the fans were great for the Predators in round one, and I saw how good they were in Winnipeg for the Jets, and I expect it to be even more for both sides come round two.
Adam, final question for you here. What are you looking forward to most when it comes to the coaching matchups between Peter Laviolette and his coaching staff and Paul Maurice and his coaching staff?
Well, I always really look forward to seeing Paul Maurice's glasses. You know, for someone who is, you know, visually challenged like myself, I think that Paul Maurice has some sharp glasses. He's got a good glasses game. But when I look at this series, you know, I see two coaches, you know, who are, you know, great tacticians. You know, Peter Laviolette always seems to, you know, push the right buttons whenever his team needs a kick in the butt. And Paul Maurice is the same as well. I mean, I'm interested to see which lines go up against each other in different venues, and which defensive pairs. Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, for example, saw a lot of McKinnon's line. I wonder if they see Scheifele's line or if they see Stastny's line. You know, do you put Nick Bonino, which line do you put Nick Bonino's line against, as well? I just think there's going to be a lot of, you know, chess playing, gamesmanship, as you said, happening in this series. I'm looking forward to see how these two teams decide to counteract each other's strengths.
The fun begins on Friday with Game 1 between the Jets and the Predators in Nashville, and then it continues, we presume Sunday for Game 2, but the remainder of the schedule hasn't been released. Adam Vingan is going to cover it for the Tennessean. Adam, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you in Winnipeg next week sometime as well.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Adam. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Predators. We'll talk about the Minnesota Wild also dismissing Chuck Fletcher as their general manager and our predictions on the series. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Let's take a moment to recognize that Chuck Fletcher is a heck of a GM and knows what he's doing. And hey, 9 years is 9 years. We're all big boys and it's business, but kind of annoying me that some people feel like this was the obvious play here. I mean, it's a smart hockey guy. And yeah, it's okay. It's been a while and he hasn't had a deep run, and that's why he's not getting re-signed. But I kind of find it baffling that people look at what the Wild has done over the past decade and think that it was nothing.
TSN hockey insider Pierre LeBrun talking about the Minnesota Wild dismissal of Chuck Fletcher as their general manager. That comes on the heels of the Wild losing in five games to the Winnipeg Jets in that first round series that was completed last Friday. We'll talk about that this segment, but before we do, some final thoughts from you guys, at least for today, on the Jets-Predators first round series. Of course, it gets underway Friday night. Your predictions on how the series is going to play out and who you think is going to move on to the Western Conference Finals.
Right. I think it's going to be a very evenly matched series, Shawnee. I think everyone agrees with that. And, you know, even though you might give the slight advantage to the Predators top 4D, I would probably give the advantage to the Jets top 6. And the goaltending is a wash for me. I think the special teams is a wash for me. And, you know, before the playoffs started, I picked Nashville to go to the Stanley Cup Final. And even though I do want to take our hometown Jets, I just think that the Jets are, you know, just not quite there. I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets win the series, but I am going to take the Predators, and I'm going to take the Predators in seven.
I will echo that. I think the Preds are on a mission this year. They've been doing it since puck drop on opening night of the season, and they're hungry. They know what they want. They've been there before, and they're going to use that experience to their credit, and I think the Jets are going to put up one heck of a fight, and I think it's going to go seven, but I think we're going to see the Preds take this one in seven.
So we have two votes for the Predators in seven thus far. I'll make it a complete triumvirate. I just think that the Predators' bottom six, is especially that Watson, Sissons, and Bonino line, is just the slightest bit better than the Winnipeg Jets' bottom six. I think, you know, a Matthew Perreault banged up, and Jack Roslovic's a good player, don't get me wrong, but I think Matthew Perreault being a little banged up and Joel Armia seeming to be a little banged up as well. I think just the...
And throw in Kulikov, too.
Kulikov out of the Jets lineup.
A little malaise around here.
There's a little bit of a malaise. I think that the just the Jets are maybe a quarter of a step this season behind the Nashville Predators, and I think the Predators are going to take this in six games. I think there's a lot of, I think these are all one goal games to speak of. I don't think that this is a blowout by any stretch, and I think that's just how tight it is between these two teams. But I think the Predators, just by virtue of their health, because they're completely healthy now that Cale Yarncroke is back in their lineup, and their bottom six, I think, is just a slight bit better than the Winnipeg Jets, and I think that'll be the difference in giving the Predators a 4-2 series victory and them winning in six games.
Yeah, and having said all that, I wouldn't be surprised if all three of us are wrong. And,
certainly.
You know, of course, you know, we're...
It's that close. That's how close these two teams
right,
are.
Right, and we're a show that covers the Winnipeg Jets all year long, but, I mean, when you do your analysis, I mean, you have to be unbiased, right? And again, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets win this series because of how they dispatched the Wild in round one, including, you know, game five when they defeated the Wild 5-0 without Toby Enstrom, without Josh Morrissey, and without Nikolaj Ehlers. But I just think it's going to come down to depth. You mentioned it, the third line for the Predators was excellent, and they have four really good scoring lines. The Jets do too, but at the end of the day, it's probably going to come down to me, to the Predators having the edge in the top four of their D.
There you have it. So we'll see, of course, as the predictions unfold and as the series unfolds with Game 1 on Friday night in Nashville, Game 2 expected to be sometime on Sunday in Nashville, and then presumably, and again, I can't echo presumably and stress presumably enough, likely Tuesday, Thursday back here in Winnipeg, but still to be determined, probably not to be determined until following tomorrow night's Game 7 between the Bruins and the Lightning. Let's talk about the Minnesota Wild dismissal of Chuck Fletcher as their general manager. You sort of heard Pierre LeBrun in the clip off the top there saying he's not sure why people assumed that this was a foregone conclusion that Chuck Fletcher wouldn't be back as Minnesota Wild general manager. It's sort of important to distinguish that he's not being fired because his contract does expire at season's end. It's just not going to be renewed. Probably just time in Minnesota for a new voice and a new man at the helm, and dismissing Bruce Boudreau probably wouldn't be fair because Boudreau didn't have a full complement of Minnesota Wild players, given that Suter and Parisi were both out of the lineup to start the playoffs, or Suter out at the start of the playoffs and then Parisi a few games in. But Chuck Fletcher, a lot of his moves haven't overwhelmingly paid off, and probably time for a new head man in Minnesota.
There's still a chance Bruce Boudreau's fired. It's not out of the question, because when a new GM comes in,
I think he gets a year.
There's always a chance. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
You were wrong about Quenneville, so.
Yeah, that's true. I was wrong about Quenneville. Thanks for pointing that out.
I've been wrong about many things.
I know.
So yeah. I'm just throwing it in your face there.
I know you are. That's okay. It's all good. We'll hug it out later.
I was surprised that they let Chuck Fletcher go.
Really?
Or, as you said, didn't re-sign him. I mean, let's be honest. He didn't do a lot prior to the trade deadline. I mean, he was not very active prior to the trade deadline.
Once bit, twice shy after his moves last year didn't work out.
Right. And, you know, I think it was a strange coincidence, I'll say that the biggest move that Chuck Fletcher made in his 9 years of being the general manager of the Wild was signing Zach Parise and Ryan Suter to those contracts. Who didn't play in Game 5 versus the Jets?
Ryan Suter and Zach Parise.
Right? So, I mean, it was a real strange coincidence. I don't know if that was going through your guys' head as well, but, I mean, I think, you know, you look at the Eric Staal signing.
He was better at signings than he was trades.
Yeah, but I mean, those are both very important, because if you look at Chevy, I mean, Chevy has not made a lot of trades over the years.
Sure, but he's been better at trade than he has been at signing.
I don't know. The Scheifele and Ehlers contracts are pretty darn good.
I meant UFA signings. How about that? Although some of those trades have blown up in his face, too.
Right.
But if you look at Fletcher's trades recently, last year the trade of Scandella and Pominville to Buffalo for Foligno and Ennis, that was a bad trade.
I don't know how bad of a trade that was. I mean, Pominville, he had the big contract, and Pominville didn't do much for Buffalo this year.
Right.
But Scandella's a good defenseman.
And Ennis, who was the cornerstone of that trade, was awful this
Ennis
year.
Ennis was not good.
Yeah.
I'll give you that much. I don't know if I'd say it's a horrible trade. It wasn't a great trade.
Fine. But not a great trade.
He had
trade.
To get rid of some contract. But the point is, Drew, I mean, he's made some good moves. He's made some bad moves.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I mean, I was expecting maybe Bruce Boudreau to be fired, to be honest with you. I mean, in a Game 5 where the Jets didn't have Nikolaj Ehlers or Josh Morrissey, they get smoked 5-0. I mean, that's pretty bad. I'm just saying, I mean, I don't think that Bruce Boudreau is completely not at fault here. I think, you know, he hasn't gotten this team to the next level. I think the roster, you know, look at the Wild during the regular season. They were third in the Central.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like the Wild are a bad team here. I mean, the Jets are clearly a better team this year.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think it is time to bring in someone new here. And, you know, this Wild team, I think, has been kind of going sideways, if you think about it. They're good during the regular season, and then they just don't go anywhere in the playoffs.
And that's been really under all their different coaches. That's been the situation. I mean, that was the situation under Mike Yeo.
Yep.
You know, Bruce Boudreau hasn't done anything to change it. Last year, they were the number one seed. They were the best team in the Central Division last year. And then they get absolutely pummeled.
Wasn't Chicago the best team in the Central?
You're right. Chicago ended up being the number one team, but Minnesota was up at the top, you know, for a lot of the season. You're right. But then they get pummeled by St. Louis. I mean, their playoff futility as of late has been first-round exit after first-round exit, and most of them, you know, fairly meekly. Lost in five this year, lost in five last year, despite having home ice advantage. I think it was just time for a new voice there.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've made the playoffs the last six seasons, so that's an impressive accomplishment as a franchise. But then you look, and they've only won two series, and they've gone 4-16 in their past 20 playoff games, and it just looks as if this roster that's been built by Chuck Fletcher just can't seem to get it done in the playoffs. And like owner Craig Leopold said, just not good isn't good enough anymore, and we need a new set of eyes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, making the playoffs is nice, and that's important, obviously, but
you got
to
win.
You have to win. And last year was probably their best opportunity to win, and they, you know, he really sold a lot. He gave up a lot of assets to acquire from Arizona. Phil, help me out, guys. Name is on the tip of my tongue. Who did they get from Arizona? He plays in Dallas now. He signed in Dallas as a free agent. My brain has gone completely blank. That was who the big trade acquisition last year at the trade deadline, and he was awful for
Marty Hanzel.
Marty Hanzel, thank you. I was thinking Marty Havlat, but that was a bad free agent signing that he made. I got my Martys confused. Marty Hanzel, not Marty Havlat. But that was where he went all in, and it blew up in his face. They lost to 5 to St. Louis, and I think losing in 5 again, it decided that Craig Leopold wants to bring in new blood. Who's that new blood going to be, Ezzie? Is Paul Fenton the guy, you think?
Maybe. I really don't know. I mean, you've heard the same names that I've heard, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you make a lot of good points, and I can't disagree with you. And, you know, for me, I think whoever becomes the general manager of the Wild, they have to look at bringing someone in via trade. I think they've explored the free agency route, and for me, you're dealing from a strength, and your strength is at forward right now. And I think you have to bring in a top four defenseman. You mentioned Marco Scandella. He was a former top four defenseman. I think if you're the new general manager of the Wild, you have to shore up that top four. That, to me, I mean, the Wild have enough guys that can put the puck in the net, even though they weren't doing it successfully against the Jets.
After watching Nino Niederreiter, Jason Zucker, and Charlie Coyle in that first round, who wants to give up an asset to acquire those guys after their first-round embarrassment? I mean, those guys – I mean, Mikko Koivu is obviously not going anywhere. He's going to be a Minnesota Wild player until he doesn't want to be a Wild player anymore. But those three guys who are sort of cornerstone players for the Minnesota Wild just didn't show up whatsoever in the playoffs, and now you expect that somebody's going to give you a top-four defenseman for one of them?
Well, and one of those players – I would expect to be traded. There's a good chance they get traded, but you know, you look at Joel Eriksson Ek and you look at Jordan Greenway, rookie players, they were both really good.
So, yeah, they were impactful, certainly.
There are a lot of reasons to be excited if you're a Wild fan. I just think that, you know, looking at that Wild decor against the Jets, without Ryan Suter, they were pretty thin.
Mm-hmm. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. We'll talk more about the Stanley Cup playoffs, look ahead to the second round in some instances as well. Stephen Wino joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Stephen Wino of the Associated Press. We know him as Stephen. You might know him as Shadow's dad. How is Shadow, Stephen?
Shadow's great. Shadow's enjoying the beach time during the playoffs.
That's always important. We always need to check in on our guest dogs and make sure they're doing well as a dog friendly show that we are here. Yeah, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen obviously brought you on to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs and the second round of the playoffs. Let's start with the team you cover most closely, the Washington Capitals. Lose the first two games at home to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Alex Ovechkin with a bold proclamation that he was proven correct about. That was the most impressive playoff performance that I've seen from the Washington Capitals in a fairly long time. Agree or disagree with that statement?
I agree, and it's because this team has shown resilience over the years and that they've fallen behind in series in 3-1 against Pittsburgh last year, 2-0 really a long time ago against the Rangers and John Tortorella in 2009. But for them to be able to fall behind 2-0 at home in this series and be able to come back the way they did shows a lot about what the team has been able to do in these playoffs, in this season, and kind of how they've embraced not being the favorite. And really, when they're the underdog this season, this series, they've been great. And Alex Ovechkin, whether you want to call it a guarantee or a proclamation or whatever you want to say, he said, look, we're going to be back. The series is going to be tied. And not only that, he backed it up. He scored. He scored big goals, scored two in the series clincher in Game 6 in Columbus last night. This is a guy who is in that kind of playoff mode that people criticized him a lot during his career for not scoring that big goal, for not leading the Capitals further in the playoffs. And he looks like a guy right now ready to lead them through the Penguins to the Eastern Conference Final.
Steven, Evgeny Malkin didn't play in Game 6 for the Pens against Philadelphia. He didn't practice today. How much of a factor do you think Malkin's health is going to be in this series?
Gigantic. A huge factor, because the one thing that you could say from last year's series, and Braden Holtby was not good in the first couple games against Pittsburgh last year, but the fact that they could go Crosby, Malkin, Bonino against the Capitals, and those guys were better than Backstrom, Kuznetsov, and Lars Eller, was a gigantic difference in the Penguins beating the Capitals last year. And if it's not Evgeny Malkin in that spot, if it has to be Gensel in the middle, or it has to be Brassard as a second-line center, and kind of messing with the depth that the Penguins have down the middle, Capitals might have them at that point. And the Capitals have been waiting basically a decade for a break to go their way in their kind of march through the playoffs. They've gotten hit with Jaroslav Halak. They've gotten hit with facing the Penguins three separate times and losing. If Evgeny Malkin is not healthy and they get to face a Penguins team without him, this could be the break Washington needs to be able to make that kind of run, because Pittsburgh without Malkin, as well as the Penguins played Sunday in Philadelphia without him, I don't know that they can survive an entire series against a division champion team without a guy like that.
Steven, after dropping the first two on the road, Capitals turn to Braden Holtby. He goes four straight wins, a 932 save percentage, a 192 goals against average. Without sounding too harsh, fair to say the Philip Grubauer experiment has come to an end?
It did, and I did wonder four games in that series if Barry Trotz had gone with Braden Holtby from the start, if the Capitals had been up 3-1 instead of tied 2-2, it didn't really seem to matter. And you almost have to admire Barry Trotz in going with his gut, sticking with Braden Holtby, sticking with Philip Grubauer, even though the easy choice is Braden Holtby to start that series. But Holtby came in and showed why he's a Vezina Trophy-winning goaltender. He showed why he's done this over the years, and despite his lack of success against the Penguins early in the series last year, why his playoff numbers are so good. And he is a bigger goaltender. He's able to make those saves that maybe go over Philip Grubauer's shoulder. He did not allow a whole lot of bad goals. Braden Holtby is dialed in right now, and more so than he was at the start of the second round against Pittsburgh last year.
Stephen Wino's our guest on NHL This Week. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, moving away from the Capitals-Penguins second-round series, it's going to be a Game 7 tomorrow night in Boston between the Leafs and the Bruins. You know, when the Bruins had a 3-1 lead and the Leafs looked like they were fairly lethargic through the first four games of the series, how surprised are you to see that it's going back to Boston for a Game 7, which could be fairly epic given the history between these two teams when it comes to Game 7s?
Yeah, you know, I was a little surprised that once I got through Game 5, given how well Freddie Anderson played in that one, getting Nazem Kadri back certainly helped Toronto to be able to get back in that series. And you kind of have that depth of offense back. You've got the Connor Browns, you've got Kadri and Bozak and Van Riemsdyk, and enough scorers for the lineup to be able to put some goals up on Tuukka Rask and wind up chasing Tuukka Rask in that game. And the emotional kind of, you don't want to say it's a rallying point, but the way the Leafs played in that game last night, they were all over the Bruins. Rask was pretty good. Freddie Anderson was pretty good. It was a good game. It was a punch against punch kind of game. And really, it's been that kind of series between a number two and number three team in a division between Toronto and Boston. And now it's anybody's series. And you're right. There certainly is that the epic history of games between the Leafs and Bruins in Boston, most notably 2013, and the James Reimer and the blown 4-1 lead, which everyone was talking about during Game 5 when that almost happened. Freddie Anderson is not James Reimer. This is not that Leafs team. This is not this is a team now coached by Mike Babcock. It is totally different than then. A lot of the roster is turned over, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest bit if the Maple Leafs come out of Game 7 with a victory and face the Tampa Bay Lightning starting on Friday night.
Stephen, we've got the one series going to a seventh game, but when you look at the first round as a whole, and I don't want to be a negative Nelly here, but has the first round been a little bit underwhelming for you?
Sure, a little bit. And I've been around the Capitals blue jacket, so it's been a lot of overtimes and close and exciting games. But I also understand how many people are focused on the other series, and Vegas, L.A. being a sweep, Anaheim, San Jose being a sweep, and kind of the disappointments with that. There's been drama, but you've had to look and find it, whether it's Philadelphia forcing a Game 6 against Pittsburgh and Sean Couturier having a five-point night with a hat-trick on torn MCL, or whether it's all the overtimes in this Washington-Columbus series, Toronto and Boston finally going far. But the NHL was certainly worried at a certain point in the series in the first round that there weren't going to be any Game 7s, that this is going to end too early. And we haven't had that. We've finally gotten Toronto and Boston going to that Game 7. But there have been maybe a fewer surprises than we thought. I did like Vegas to beat L.A., and maybe a few people were surprised about that. We've seen some of the better teams get through. This is the first time since realignment that all four division champions have made it to the second round. And maybe that's part of the kind of the lack of buzz about the first round, because you haven't had any of these gigantic upsets yet. Pending the Maple Leafs, Bruins series, of course, but you now have the four best teams in the league all moving on and all the division champions moving on, so maybe you set yourself up for a second round like that.
Steve, I'm glad you brought up Sean Couturier, because it's not too often that a four-goal playoff game gets overlooked. Sorry, Jake Guentzel, but I mean, what Sean Couturier was able to do despite the elimination game, three goals, two assists on pretty much one knee, is pretty damn impressive.
Oh, it's unreal, and to see him do that, he was the best player on the ice for the Flyers in Game 6, despite playing on that torn MCL. And you do wonder if Radko Gudas had not gone knee-to-knee on Sean Couturier in that practice, what the Flyers might have been able to to in game five. They might have been able to force a game seven. Not to take away from Jake Gensel and the Penguins and Matt Murray and how good they are and how resilient they are and what Sidney Crosby can do in big games. But, man, Tuukka-Turri is a monster. And we've seen such unbelievable play from Mark Scheifele, obviously, in Winnipeg, and Sean Couturier in Philadelphia, the seventh and eighth picks in that draft from a few years ago, where you wonder, you really couldn't have gone wrong with those two picks. And to see number one centers there in Scheifele and Couturier be able to show what they can do a few years into the league is pretty darn impressive.
Stephen Wino, our guest on NHL This Week. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, the Tampa Bay Lightning have kicked up their feet. They've been enjoying the sunshine in Florida. You know, are they best positioned now, given that the team they're going to be facing are going to a seven-game series? They don't really have much in terms of the injury front. The Lightning just have to be happy to be kicking back and relaxing and enjoying the time off before their second-round series gets underway against a team that, you know, between the Bruins and the Leafs.
Yeah, they better be rested and well positioned for this, because neither of those teams are going to go quietly, and they're certainly going to take a little bit out of Boston and Toronto to go seven games in that series, and Tampa be able to eliminate Jersey in five, and it helps to get Vasilevsky some rest and get Steven Stamkos some rest, as he's been dealing with a lower body injury that nagged him late in the season. And this is a Tampa team that won the division. As much as they might have struggled in the last 3 weeks or a month of the year, this was a team that, over the course most of the 82-game season, they were the team to beat. Everyone said, this is the Stanley Cup favorite. And now we get a chance to see, are they really that? Are they going to, with home ice now against either Boston or Toronto, going to be able to get to the East Final the way everybody expected of them? And they've got a goaltender who's played in the Cup Final before, Andrei Vasilevsky, when he took over for Ben Bishop a few years ago against Chicago. Maybe struggle a little bit then, but he's done this before. A lot of these guys have been here in the situation before, and so is John Cooper. This is a team that there's no excuses for at this point in the playoffs that they can't go to the Stanley Cup Final.
Steven, when you look at the Jets-Predators series, does either team have an advantage over the other, a distinct advantage over the other, or is this a coin flip in your mind?
I think the Predators probably have an advantage. Based on their regular season success against the Jets, and I know a lot of these games were close and high scoring and all that, and I think based on the playoff experience that Nashville has over Winnipeg, not just last year on the trip to the final, but to the second round a few times, and they've got a bunch of guys and a coach who have been there before. And that's not to say that Connor Hellebuck can't steal a series and Paul Maurice can't devise a plan to beat the Predators. But you have to give Nashville a little bit of an edge in this series, just because this was a better regular season team. They did better in these matchups. As much as Winnipeg has the depth down the middle as well now with Stastny, with Scheifele, Stastny, and Little, that Nashville has the same thing. You have to think that Laviolette and the Predators, and certainly the blue line depth that Nashville has, puts them a little bit of an edge right now, but maybe not a coin flip. I would say about a 60-40 series.
Steven, we talked about Alex Ovechkin a little bit at the beginning of our conversation. I just love his post-game comments when the reporter asks him, excited to go up against Sidney Crosby and the Penguins, and he just goes, he's a little twinkle in his eye, I can't wait. This guy is just, he's ready to take on the Penguins and beat Sidney Crosby, isn't he?
He better be. And it's happened so many times now. He's had his Stanley Cup dreams crushed by Sidney Crosby and the Penguins three times already. 2009, 2016, 2017, that this is the Capitals' chance. And you don't know how many more chances they'll have to get through Pittsburgh and get to a Stanley Cup final. That Alex Ovechkin now looks primed for this. I mean, he was great in this series against the Blue Jackets. If you ever think there's going to be another dueling hat trick game like Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin had in 2009, they could certainly do this now, the way Crosby's scoring for Pittsburgh, the way Alex Ovechkin's scoring on the power play specifically for Washington right now. This could be appointment viewing. And amazingly, it's not even one of the top three series people are most interested in. It might be the fourth most interesting series right now. Given Nashville, Winnipeg are the top two teams in the league, it could be Boston and Tampa as 3 and 4, and then an expansion team in Vegas against San Jose. That Capitals Penguins, amazingly, is the fourth most interesting series and could provide the most fireworks of anything in the second round.
Last one for you, Steven. Does Barry Trotz need to win the series to get a contract extension?
This is a strange one for me, and even as recently as a few days ago, I thought there was no chance he's going to come back, and I still wonder if it's too frayed, the relationship between Barry Trotz and Brian McClellan, for Barry Trotz to come back next season in any way. I think he could be headed to Dallas. He could be headed to New York or somewhere else that needs a coach. But if this team makes it to a conference final or makes it to a cup final, you wonder if there's been enough done in this organization to say Barry Trotz has done such a good job with this team, and this has been maybe his best coaching job yet, even though he's not going to win the Jack Adams this year, to be able to get a team that lost so much in the offseason to get to this point and potentially get past the Penguins now. For a guy who's never gotten past the second round in his entire career with Nashville or Washington, it would be quite the impressive feat. And look, if it's not going to get him a contract in Washington, it's going to get him a contract somewhere in the NHL.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Sounds good, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Stephen. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we talk about the Bruins and the Leafs. Game 7. We at least have one Game 7 in the first round. That's tomorrow. We talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
There goes Rask to the bench. Empty net. Leafs get it out in center. To the line. Here's Plekanec. Scores! We're going to Boston, baby!
Joe Bowen with the call. The Leafs, Thomas Plekanec, puts it into the empty net. Really only because Patrick Marleau's pick play at the blue line wasn't called for the interference that it was. But the Leafs come back from 3-1 down. It's now a winner-take-all best of one, as Leafs head coach Mike Babcock said. Game 7 between the Leafs and the Bruins tomorrow night.
Holy Mackinac.
Holy Mackinac, yes, indeed. I feel like a Harvey's Burger right now, if anybody else does too.
Joe Bowen is a beauty.
Joe Bowen is a beauty. Gotta like his enthusiasm, if you will. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, maybe you're looking for a place to catch the game Friday night at 7 o'clock. Mm. Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got the great food and drink specials. Full volume. It's the place to be to catch the game. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check them out, bernsteinsdeli.com.
Drew, do you own a Mackinac jacket?
I don't. What's a Mackinac jacket?
It's a type of jacket.
The Mackinac Peach.
I know about the Mackinac Peach from Seinfeld, but I don't know anything about a Mackinac jacket.
Google Mackinac jacket.
I will.
Not now, but when the show's over.
Okay. I will do that because you have me intrigued as to what you're speaking about. Bruins and Leafs, Game 7, tomorrow night.
I can't wait.
The only Game 7 in the first round of the series, the first round of the playoffs.
I mean, Drew, you know, just going back to what we talked about with Stephen Wino last segment,
yeah.
If there wasn't a Game 7 in the first round, that would have just simply sucked.
It would be disappointing. It definitely would have been disappointing.
You got to have a Game 7 in the first round. You got to have a Game 7 in every round, preferably.
We haven't had as many overtimes as we're used to having in the first round.
Then what's going on? We need to run more ICOT pools.
I agree. We need to run more of those. We can't make them happen, though. The games have to go to overtime.
Rumors Comedy Club has lots of tickets to give away. We want to give away some tickets.
They want to give away tickets to fans who participate in the hashtag ICOT pool. You're absolutely right about that. How surprised are you, Ezzy and Sean, that despite the Bruins being up 3-1, and when it seemed like they had the series firmly in hand, that we're going back to Boston for a winner-take-all Game 7?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
I believe
I picked the Bruins in 7. And maybe we're surprised, guys, because the Bruins went up 3-1, and it was because, you know, they went up 3-1 with authority. And you got to give the Leafs a lot of credit, starting with Freddie Anderson. I mean, I know you guys watched the game yesterday. Freddie Anderson makes 18 saves in the first period. Mm-hmm. And it starts off with a huge save on Rick Nash. I mean, Freddie Anderson is playing like he did during the regular season. I mean, you ask anybody that watched the Leafs all year, they will tell you Freddie Anderson was their MVP. He was sensational. And unfortunately, in a year in which there were a lot of goalies that had career years, including Connor Hellebuck, I mean, you ask some people, Freddie Anderson could have easily been a Vezina Trophy candidate. So for me, the big story was Freddie Anderson in Game 6. But, you know, you look at some of the adjustments Toronto made. Andreas Johnsson on that fourth line, he's contributed offensively. I think he's looked really good on that fourth line.
Very speedy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of speed he brings to the table for the Leafs there. As, you know, Leo Komarov, Johansson came in when Komarov went out with his injury. Komarov healthy for Game 7. but it's hard to believe that Mike Babcock would put him right back into the lineup, given the success he's had since he's been out of the lineup.
And, you know, I tweeted this out yesterday. I mean, I love Zach Hyman. And Zach Hyman, you know, has the goal that's overturned yesterday, and it doesn't count. But
that was the right call, by the way.
It was the right call. But I think, you know, Hyman, Matthews, and Connor Brown, I mean, Nylander is who we're used to seeing on that top line. And Mike Babcock, I think, Sean, has made the right adjustments. And we have to mention, I mean, Nazem Kadri doesn't play in games 2, 3, or 4. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Leafs won games 5 and 6, right? I think Nazem Kadri, I mean, it completely changes the outlook of your team. We know Nazem Kadri is one of the best defensive centers in the league, so I think that's been huge. And quite simply, the top line of Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand, in the games that they've lost, they haven't contributed. And the games that they've won, they've been dominant, right? They had 20 points in the first two games, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the story. The Leafs have been able to shut down Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak in half of these games. The games that they haven't shut them down, they've won those games. So it's going to be a real interesting Game 7. I hope it goes to overtime, because I think the fans deserve an overtime in Game 7.
Yeah, ask them to ramp up the stress on a lot of these fan bases there, Mr. Ginsburg.
That's what it's all about, though, the playoffs, overtime, ICOT pool.
Let's see like a quadruple overtime.
What's really interesting.
Well, that's what Jeff Vinnick said in his comments today. Vinnick, of course, the owner of the Tampa Bay Lightning, said he hopes it goes 4 overtimes and he hopes the teams beat the hell out of each other.
I love it. Yeah. Love the honesty. Game 7 records, though, really interesting. Boston 13-12, 12-8 at home.
Mm-hmm.
The Leafs, meanwhile, 12-10, 5-9 on the road.
The Leafs have nothing to lose, in my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Except for the series.
Right, but you know what I mean. They can play free. They can play sort of free and loose, though, because, one, I think people would have said that if they had lost in the first round to Boston, it wouldn't be an upset because Boston was better than the Leafs this year. Two, they were down 3-1. And just to come back and make it to a seventh game has shown a pretty good level of resiliency. And maybe you could say they got one game further than they did last year when they lost in 6 games in the first round. So the Leafs come into Boston with, I think they can just sort of play their game. They don't really have any pressure necessarily on them or an exceptional amount of pressure.
I agree. There's a lot of pressure on the Bruins here, guys.
Up 3-1, you had 2 opportunities at home to finish it, and you're not able to do it. That's going to be a disappointing season for Boston because, you know, they played so well throughout the regular season that all of a sudden this seems like a missed opportunity for the Bruins if they don't capitalize in Game 7.
Yeah, and I like the mention of pressure and dealing with that, because you want to talk about a pressure-packed situation for the Maple Leafs. How about Game 6 yesterday on home ice after what transpired in Toronto?
Of course.
I mean, the city needs a pick-me-up. The team is playing for their season live, and they come out with a win, and that's... That alone must alleviate so much pressure going into Game 7 that, like you were talking about, Drew, you can somewhat play a little more freely.
I agree with you, Sean, with what happened in Toronto yesterday. Completely, you know, tragic what happened, and it was really nice for the Leafs to win that game in Toronto. And, you know, I wanted to mention, too, Drew, you know, you look at the bottom 6 of Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you're able to put out, you know, JVR and Tyler Bozak and Kasperi Kapanen on your third line. To me, that's going to be a story tomorrow as well. Because we mentioned, I mean, Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak, I've said this on the show before, might be the best line in hockey,
mm-hmm.
really. And Jake DeBrusk has been excellent in the series as well. He had a great rookie year, but you know, you look at the bottom 6 of Boston, Riley Nash, David Backes, guys like Tim Schaller. I mean, they've got to start getting some production from those bottom 2 lines, even though, you know, you expect, you know, some goals to come from those top 2 lines. And for Toronto, I think, you know, that hasn't been the issue. It was, you know, early on in the series, you know, Austin Matthews wasn't producing, and now he's starting to play a lot better. So I think this is going to be a really tight game, and, you know, it's going to be really exciting to watch, as we mentioned, because as far as I'm concerned, this has been the best first-round series by far.
Is it too simplistic to say the team that has the goaltender that plays better wins Game 7?
Probably not. And Freddie Anderson has been better than Tuukka Rask in the series.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so, Freddie Anderson, I mean, if he hadn't been playing really A-plus hockey, the Leafs would have lost a lot of these games.
And I wouldn't say Tuukka Rask has been bad, but Freddie Anderson has been superb.
Yeah, I mean, you remember the paddle save that he made in Game 5, I believe that was late in the game there, you know, coming across and just, you know, like a tennis racket.
He made one in Game 6 like that just as well. He seems to be making these paddle saves regularly now. It's crazy.
He's been terrific. It's going to be an epic Game 7 tomorrow night between Boston and Toronto. Boston. The winner, unfortunately for the winner, gets a very well-rested Tampa Bay Lightning team that's sort of just sitting back in Tampa and you know,
licking their chops.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be looking and saying, okay, you know, when did they finish that series?
They've been playing a little beach volleyball, surfing.
Would they finish that series, last Saturday? So it'll be a full week for them off?
Actually, I don't know if you can surf in Tampa Bay. You can surf in Miami.
I'm sure you can find a wave or two.
And going back to how we started the show, the Mackinaw jacket is a short coat or jacket made of a thick, heavy woolen cloth.
It's like a lumberjack jacket.
Typically with a plaid design.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yes. Comes from upstate Michigan, Mackinaw, Michigan.
Yeah. All right.
There you go. You find out.
You might have to buy one.
Fashion advice, hockey.
I think you'd look good in a Mackinaw jacket, Drew.
Well, I got
you're a stylish guy.
I got the beard going, so maybe I should.
You're a rugged guy as well.
I am very rugged,
Screams ruggedness.
I scream rugged.
Very manly.
I scream rugged masculinity on a daily basis. When we come back, we're going to head out to San Jose. Remember, there's two other teams to be playing in a playoff series.
Speaking of surfing,
when was the last time the Golden Knights and the Sharks played? Like a month ago,
something like that. Paul Gackle of the San Jose Mercury News joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For more information, visit them online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to the Bay Area where we're joined by Paul Gackle, who covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Paul, how's the offseason been going?
It does feel like the offseason. I was actually just saying that to one of the other beat writers today, is that it feels like the playoffs are kind of over because you go through that mad rush, where it's every other day, and then to have this sort of like 7 or 8 day lull that we're at right now, it's like you kind of wind it down a little bit. So yeah, really looking at, glad that they finally have that game one hammered down for 7 p.m. on Thursday night, and hopefully we get back into the swing of things right away here.
Paul, what's Pete DeBoer been doing to keep the Sharks sort of, their focus and keep them, interested and, aware of the task at hand? It can't be easy to just practice for the last 8 days or with some time off there as well, I'm sure.
But, that's true. But, I think that the theme with Pete DeBoer in this club since he took over a couple years ago and they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, that this group has such a veteran leadership. And, this isn't a team that needs, coaching tricks and, gimmicks in practice to be sharp and be ready when puck drop comes in the playoffs. I mean, you look at this team, they've been through pretty much every experience that you can have in the Stanley Cup playoffs, minus actually winning the cup. They've been to the final and had some success. They've choked up a 3-0 lead. They've choked up a 3-0 lead and come back to win in game 7 against the Red Wings. So they're going to be ready to go when the time comes. Pete DeBoer, he did give them a couple days off, which I think, you pretty much have to do when you have this much time off. And then beyond that, it's been about 45-minute practices and, just going through the normal drill. But, you look at this team, throughout the regular season, there's a lot of days in the year where they don't do morning skates or they have optional practices. From what I understand, the Sharks are, at the top of the, among the top of the league leaders when it comes to just the lack of ice time that they actually see practice-wise and morning skate-wise over the course of the year. Because it is a veteran group, he tends to err on the side of rest. And because they log the most travel miles in the NHL, there's also a necessity to do that. And there's never been really any, negative signs that have come out of taking that approach. So I think you just trust these guys that come puck drop in game one on Thursday night, they're going to be ready to go.
Paul, I don't think many people were predicting the San Jose Sharks to sweep the Anaheim Ducks. A lot of people were picking the Sharks to win their first-round series, but what surprised you the most in that first-round sweep? Was it the way the Sharks shut down the Ducks' top guns? Was it the play of Martin Jones, or should we not be surprised by the play of Martin Jones considering how good he was 2 years ago when he took the Sharks to the Stanley Cup final against the Pens?
Yeah, no, we shouldn't be surprised by the play of Martin Jones in the playoffs at this point now. You know, I think he's starting to prove that, you know, I think he's one of the best goalies in the league, quite frankly. You know, he's just that prototype, big body, great positioning, really calm and sound back there. But it seems like he is able to take his game to an even higher level when it comes to Stanley Cup playoff time. And he had that great run when they, you know, lost to the final to the Penguins a couple of years ago. But even last year in that series against the Oilers, like, I don't even think the Sharks take that to six games, you know, if it isn't for the play of Martin Jones. I want to say he had a .951 save percentage in that series. There was a Game 5 overtime game that they actually lost where he was just outstanding. He had 19 saves in the overtime session or something like that. So he's just one of those guys that gets the job done. My biggest surprise, you know, there were things that I was sort of that were on my mind that I was thinking about that winded up being an even greater advantage for the Sharks than I thought. One, I knew the Sharks were going to be a faster team in that series. You know, I'm still surprised by how much faster they were. You know, this was a Sharks team that we saw really lose the speed game against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the final in 2016. And, you know, I think that got the league even faster than it was already going at that point in time. So the Sharks sort of developed this reputation maybe being a little behind the times in some of those things. You look at that series with the Ducks were playing sort of mid-90s, you know, cycle and a real heavy game, but just not much speed in their game. They couldn't pinch down the wings, you know, in the offensive zone like you need to in the modern game. They weren't closing that gap in the neutral zone. It seemed like Francois Beauchemin was leaving like 20 feet of space, you know, in the going through the neutral zone. The Sharks just gained the line at will. So I was just surprised at how wide the speed discrepancy was. And I didn't realize just how much of a loss Cam Fowler was going to be. I knew he was going to be a big loss. But when you look at that blue line, you know, last year, you know, the Ducks, you'd put them right up there with, you know, the Nashville Predators, even the Jets, the Blues, teams like that, as having among the best defensive cores in the National Hockey League. And you lose Shea Theodore, you know, related to the expansion draft. You have to trade Sammy Vatanen to get some center depth when Kessler and Getzlaf go down. And then you lose Fowler, you know, on the eve of the playoffs. And, you know, that blue line just wasn't very good. They had Walensky and Pettersson back there on their third pairing. They go into that series with a combined 29 games of NHL experience. You have to move Francois Beauchemin up to where he's playing a top four role. And like I said, he just didn't have the wheels to really, you know, be effective out there. And then not having that top puck moving guy, yeah, the defense just looked really slow. They couldn't really slow down the Sharks forecheck. You knew Fowler was going to be a big injury, but I didn't think it was going to be to that extent.
Paul, what have you made of the line of Marcus Sorensen, Eric Fehr, and Melker Karlsson? So much is made of depth scoring in the playoffs, and this line really seems to have embraced that kind of mentality and of putting up some pretty valuable points for the Sharks.
Yeah, really amazing the story of that fourth line for the Sharks this year because, you know, that's a big thing for Pete DeBoer. Is he always says we have to be a four-line team. If we're going anywhere, we're rolling a four-line. Each line brings pressure. We want to attack in waves. We want to take the minutes off, you know, some of our top guys, some of the older guys so that they, you know, can stay fresh, you know, longer into these games. And throughout the season, they were really struggling to establish that four-line depth. And, you know, a lot of nights you saw that fourth line get cut, you know, late second period, certainly in the third period. They couldn't seem to lock down a fourth line center. They started the year with Ryan Carpenter, who's actually playing with the Vegas Golden Knights now and doing quite well in that system, I must say. But he was a guy that really had a lot of success in the AHL at the Barracuda. It was sort of the horse that they rode in their run in the Calder Cup playoffs last year when they went to the Western Conference Final. But after 16 games, he just wasn't cutting it for DeBoer. They wind up waving him, and then it just became a revolving door on that line. They tried moving Barkley Goodrow over to center, who hadn't played center, you know, since minor hockey. They tried Joel Ward there. They tried Danny O'Regan, who wound up getting traded
over to the Buffalo Sabres in that Evander Kane trade. Nothing was working. The fourth line just wasn't going. Then on February 12th, Doug Wilson, he makes a very subtle move, trading for Eric Fair with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who was actually playing with the Anaheim Ducks AHL team. And, you know, Wilson had heard, you know, Fair won the cup with on that Pittsburgh team a couple years ago. He had heard that Fair was just really, you know, doing some good things in the AHL through the Sharks AHL franchise and their head coach, Roy Sommer, with the Barracuda. Saying, man, you got to take a look at this guy. This guy is just a beast down there. And lo and behold, they give up a seventh-round pick in 2020. They bring in Eric Fair, you know, who had been spent his entire season pretty much down in the AHL. He comes in on February 20th and really locked down that position. And the fourth line all of a sudden started going. They had an eight-game winning streak at the end of March, and the fourth line produced eight goals in that span. Yeah. The funny thing about it, it was at that point, it was Eric Fair with Yannick Hansen and Barkley Goodrow. Goodrow gets hurt towards the end of March. Marcus Sorensen gets plugged in there. And obviously, Melker Carlson comes off the injured reserve. He's on the right side. Four goals from that line in that series. Marcus Sorensen, he is a fast-skating player. This guy really flies. And I think that's a real benefit to the Sharks to have that kind of speed down there at the bottom of the lineup. You talk about some of the things that went on in that Anaheim series. You know, a real speed mismatch when you're talking about the third and fourth lines. Marcus Sorensen's a big part of that, scores three goals in that series when he pretty much, you know, they were expecting him to come in and lock down an NHL job in training camp this year. And he just had no consistency in his game during training camp. They sent him to the AHL, no consistency in his game down there. He gets this opportunity right at the end of the season, strings together about four or five good games in a row. DeBoer has the hunch, you know what, might as well give him a look in the playoffs. And he was really a difference maker in that series. So, yeah, that depth edge is really a thing that's been working for the Sharks here, you know, really since they got hot post-Evander Kane.
Paul Gackel, our guest on NHL This Week. Paul covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. The Sharks and the Vegas Golden Knights will do battle in the second round. Paul, fill in this blank. Joe Thornton will play X number of games in this series.
Whoo!
This will be Paul's final appearance on the show because he'll never answer our text messages again.
Well, this is a tough one because the way I've approached this Joe Thornton situation, and, you know, in talking to Joe, you know, he came back last year, obviously, he tears his ACL and his MCL and his left knee right on the eve of the playoffs, April 2nd, comes back in game three of that series with Edmonton and plays four games with tears in his knee. And, you know, Joe Thornton's not the fleetest of foot to begin with, but, you know, really haven't trouble getting to loose pucks, accelerating away from defenders, helping them move through the neutral zone. Comes back after has surgery after the playoffs. Comes back, is there on the first day of training camp. But over the first, I would say, 10 weeks of the season, really wasn't himself. And you start asking the question, you know, is the sun setting on Joe Thornton's career here? You know, do they need to shut him down and really get him fully healthy from all these knee issues? And he took like 2 weeks off of practice, maybe a week off of practice. And by late November, he was just humming again. And he winds up finishing out before his injury, 26 points in his last 28 games. But back to your question about coming into this series, Joe is very aware that he wasn't his best self in that series against the Oilers last year. But they didn't have a chance to out him. And he wasn't his best self early in the season when he was struggling over the first 10 weeks. And I think that he knows that he can't come back when this team is clicking and going the way that they're going right now. He can't come back and be that early season Joe Thornton that was only at 80%. You know, he can't come back and be a distraction and detract from the team. He can't come back and play a game and they have to yank him out of the lineup because he's just not good enough, or create a headache for Pete DeBoer. Where do I play him in the lineup? I don't want to be disrespectful to the Hall of Famer, but really this is a guy that should be on our third or fourth line. So I think Joe's very conscious and aware of that. He told me after the morning skate prior to game two that he doesn't want to be a distraction. He's only going to be, you know, come back when he's ready, but let me translate that a little bit for you. Joe Thornton's going to come back if and when the Sharks really have a trump card that they need to play because they fall in a hole. The way they're going, They're 15-5 and 1 with Evander Kane in the lineup since that trade. They don't want him to come in and detract for that. The way they're going, if they keep winning, there's no need to plug Joe into the lineup. They can keep bag skating him after practice, get him back to where he needs to be. And then, you know, maybe that's in the later round. Who knows? But I do think if they fall in a situation where you see them fall in an 0-2 hole, or maybe it's 2-1, and they just need a little something extra, then maybe that's where you consider bringing Jumbo Joe back into the lineup. But, you know, this isn't a very good matchup for Joe Thornton either. You think of the Knights, they're, you know, a real speed team. Is that really the time that you want to reintegrate this guy back into your lineup? So for me to say how many games, you know, I have to take a guess, you know, that are the Sharks going to be ahead or are they going to trail in this series? And I think this is going to be such an evenly matched series, 7 games. You know what? I'm going to say we don't see Joe Thornton in this series.
There you go. I like it. It's a bold answer.
Paul, final question for you here, and we are going to need a prediction. You just said the series is going to go to 7 games. We want to know who you're going to pick to win this series. But final question, if you want to find one advantage that the Sharks have over the Golden Knights, is it the top four of Paul Martin, Brent Burns, Mark-Edward Vlasic, and Justin Braun? Because we know that the Golden Knights didn't score a lot of goals against the Kings in the first round. Is that where the Sharks have the biggest advantage over the Golden Knights? And what is your prediction for this series between the Sharks and the Golden Knights?
Well, that is a good advantage spot. I would say the blue line, but I would actually go maybe more the 1-6 because I think their third pairing, Dylan DeMello and Brendan Dillon, God, I want to say they had like 18 points combined between them in the month of March. They were really, really good down the stretch, and I think that depth is really where the Sharks, you know, have had the edge on the blue line. Obviously, the Knights are a very deep team too, but the Sharks might be a little deeper on the blue line than the Knights. Top four, I mean, the Paul Martin thing is kind of an interesting one. One of the topics of discussion around here, because Paul Martin, you know, played only 3 games up until St. Patrick's Day and was a guy that was asked for a trade because he really couldn't get past Joachim Rien on the depth chart and looked like his days in San Jose were done. He went down to the AHL, played 18 games. There was no takers. So he winded up coming back up to the team after the trade deadline. Joachim Rien gets hurt. He gets plugged in there on St. Patty's Day. And the team's just been winning. So Pete DeBoer's stuck with him. But, you know, he's still slow to get back to pucks on the retrieval. You know, some of those Boschman things, the gap in the neutral zone, you know, he always pinch up the boards the way they want him to. So that's a question that I have. Is he going to be exposed by the Vegas Golden Knights speed, and are they going to have to turn back to Joachim Rien, a rookie, in the middle of the playoff series? He hasn't played a game since March 17th. So that's where I have some question marks when it comes to the top four for the San Jose Sharks. But no doubt about it, the Vegas Golden Knights don't have a Mark-Edward Vlasic. I mean, we're talking about an Olympic-caliber shutdown guy, and a guy like Brent Burns who produces 300 shots, a season. The third and fourth line for the Sharks could wind up being an edge, but, you know, the Golden Knights have had great, tremendous line depth all season long, so that'll have to be wait to be seen. I'm going to take the Sharks in 7 just because I think that experience factor in a tight series, I wonder if that doesn't kick in. And I'm not one of these guys who's been really a big naysayer on the Golden Knights, you know, throughout the season. I think by about December 1st, I'd seen these guys play enough, and I was convinced this is a real hockey team. These guys are the real deal. And I was not expecting the Kings to beat them up. There's a lot of people out here on the West Coast who are going, well, now they're going to get in and play a physical team in the playoffs, a team that's won cups. This is where they're going to get exposed. I didn't think that was going to happen. They didn't. I think it's going to be a very good series. The Sharks think it's, you know, really a toss-up type series. But I might give the Sharks the slight edge just because of that experience factor.
There you have it. Paul Gackel covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Paul, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jets. Well, why don't we do it again? You know, maybe a Jets-Sharks Western Conference Final, something like that.
The battle for Paul Gackel's love, that sort of thing?
Hey, my love's always a secret.
There you go. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We come back, one final segment on this Tuesday evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
quick final segment to wrap things up on this special Tuesday edition of NHL This Week. A reminder, Saturday, 9 a.m., we'll be back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll get you, we'll recap everything that happened in Game 1 between the Jets and the Predators. That Game 1, of course, Friday night, 7 o'clock. You can hear it live on TSN 1290. And then Wednesday night and Thursday night, we'll have Manitoba Moose playoff action coming up as the Moose head to Grand Rapids. It's now a best of three series. They look to bounce back from their Game 2 defeat, try and steal the series in Grand Rapids over the next couple of nights. You know, Alex Ovechkin, they were down 2-0. They lost the first two games on home ice, came back, made his promise, said we're coming back to Washington, tied 2-2. He was a man of his word, and then they win games 5 and 6 as well. I'm impressed with Alex Ovechkin and what he did in that first round of the playoffs to now set up another matchup for the third consecutive year between the Penguins and the Capitals.
Yeah, Mark Messier would be proud. Shout out to Blake Wheeler, by the way, for being one of the nominees for the Mark Messier Award. But absolutely, Drew, Ovechkin was stellar during the regular season, and he was stellar in that first round. And we talked about this earlier on the show with Steven Wino. Braden Holtby was sensational. 1.92 goals against average, 9.32 save percentage. Comes in for Philip Grubauer, who wasn't very good in the first two games against the Blue Jackets. So, I mean, this is setting up, guys, to be another classic between the Pens and Capitals. And I think I want to say that the Pens are going to take this series. But with Evgeny Malkin's status right now unclear, I mean, I think this is going to be another one of those series that goes to 6 or 7 games. And, you know, maybe you give the Pens the advantage up the middle, but without Malkin, I mean, that means that a guy like Derek Brassard is going to have to move up to that second line. But I will say this much. Sidney Crosby on that top line with Jake Guentzel, they each had 13 points in 6 games against the Flyers. I mean, the Caps are going to have to shut down that top line.
Oh, and Braden Holtby at least looks back to being more like Braden Holtby. I mean, the Flyers don't have a goaltender, so you have to hope that, for the Capitals' sake, that Holtby is Braden Holtby of Vezina Trophy form. We'll see. Second round gets underway on Thursday night. The Jets and the Predators, Friday night, 7 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to all of our guests today, Paul Gackle, Steven Wino, and Adam Bingen. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website on tsn1290.ca. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to you each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Chris, doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.